Ghana, like many developing nations, faces an increasing demand for energy due to population growth, urbanization, and the quest for economic development. However, the country also experiences frequent power outages, which deteriorates energy security, and power generation relies heavily on fossil fuel usage. This combination calls for effective energy management and the adoption of energy-efficient practices, as well as sustainable cooling that frees up more energy for gaining economic sectors, as well as protecting our climate. Welcome to Let's Talk About Energy podcast, where we explore the critical trends, innovations, and policies shaping our energy future. I'm your host, Michael Kofi Abrokwa, and today we're focusing on Ghana's energy transition and the pivotal role of energy efficiency and cooling. As the world moves towards a more sustainable energy landscape, Ghana has taken significant steps to transition from traditional energy sources to renewable ones, whilst also promoting energy efficiency and sustainable cooling. Join us as we explore these changes, the challenges, and the opportunities for a cleaner and more sustainable future in Ghana. Ghana has set ambitious climate goals as part of its commitments to the Paris Agreement and other international climate accords. The country aims to reduce carbon emissions, promote renewable energy, and ensure sustainable development. Here to help us understand Ghana's climate change ambitions is Dr. Daniel Benefo, UNFCCC's focal point in Ghana on climate change, the Acting Director also for Climate Change at the Environmental Protection Agency and the Head of the Carbon Market Office. Welcome, Dr. Daniel Benefo.
Thank you, Michael, for having me.
So, delving straight into it, can you tell us about Ghana's climate change goals and how energy efficiency and cooling fits into the broader picture?
Okay, thanks. The Ghana's climate change commitments are contained in the nationally determined contributions. And those contributions are climate actions that the country put forward to contribute towards achieving the Paris Agreement, Article 2, what we call the NDCs. And it contains a set of 47 climate actions that are meant to help achieve our commitment. The commitment covers about actions in 11 sectors, and around 20 of them are in the energy sector, for example. And those actions alone are meant to achieve some multiple outcomes, right? So it means to reduce emissions and contribute to abating climate change, and at the same time, contribute to achieving local development. And in that respect, we are referring to interventions in the promotion of access to affordable, adequate, clean energy in the country. So more or less, the climate actions are supposed to help us to achieve the SDGs in the country as well. Now, when you come to the energy sector, there are three sets of actions which are all aimed at promoting renewable energy and at the same time doubling the energy improvement opportunities in homes, in commerce, and also in industry.
I know some of my listeners would be interested in knowing if we would become very, very basic on some of the technical terms. What are NDCs?
So the NDCs are, I put them in three ways. There are political commitments that governments make to adopt and implement a set of priority climate action in a particular country. So these are political statements or commitments. It can also be seen as an investment blueprint for a country to mobilize resources to invest in priority climate actions. And three, it is also a statement that contains a set of national climate actions that a country commits to, right? So these are priority actions that are political in nature, that are supposed to help country to mobilize resources to invest in climate action. And ultimately, and above all, these set of actions together are supposed to help the global community bring the effort towards achieving the Article 2 of the Paris Agreement, which is on long-term temperature goal. And what is that? And here is how it works. The science has established that the global surface temperature had warmed or had increased between 0.8 to 1.1 degrees Celsius since the pre-industrial era. And we are living in times where the change in the global surface temperature had manifested itself in all kinds of things, in things that we are seeing in terms of extreme weather events, in terms of its impact on us and also on economy. And in the effort to address this, countries met in Paris in 2015 to come together to address the further rise in global surface temperature beyond the 1.1. And therefore, the countries adopted the Paris Agreement, of which that Article 2.1 of it indicates that the global community will work together to avoid the further rise of the global surface temperature, not up to 1.5 degrees Celsius or even up to 2 degrees Celsius. So that is the broad goal. And for us to achieve this, the underlying factors that drive the rise in global surface temperature is the rising levels of greenhouse gases. And these gases come from our daily activities, right? The way we manufacture things, the way how we generate energy and use them, how we transport, what we eat or how we eat. These are activities that underline the economy, and the consequence of it is that it can produce greenhouse gases. The levels of greenhouse gases are going up at the same time as the rise in surface temperature. And therefore, if we cut down the emissions, we are likely to avoid further rise in the global surface temperature as has been predicted. And therefore, to be able to achieve the global surface temperature goal, the total emission has to reduce by 45% globally by 2030 and achieve a net zero by 2050. That is the only way we can be on the course towards achieving the 1.5 goal. It means that we need to cut back the sources of emissions, and energy production and use is a major source of greenhouse gases. All right. And therefore, the whole idea of promoting or doubling or tripling renewable energy and doubling energy efficiency is very important in cutting back emissions.
With all that you said, I'm surmising that there's a lot of urgency that needs to be thrown into the conversation when we talk about the climate agenda. And maybe you can throw a bit more light on how important is the energy efficiency agenda and the sustainable cooling agenda to reducing emissions on a global level, and even in Ghana, if we are being specific.
All right. So again, I'll take it from the point of view of the global perspectives, right? So last year in Dubai, there was a major review of the Paris Agreement since it was adopted in 2015. And that review is what we call the Global Stocktake. The Global Stocktake simply is a comprehensive collective assessment of the progress towards achieving the Paris Agreement. So that is what it meant, right? And there are three very interesting, striking conclusions that are relevant for our discussion. The first one is that for us to be able to stay on course towards achieving the 1.5 degrees temperature goal, it is important for the global community to cut back emissions. And not only cut emissions or cut back, is to have a deep cut of emissions to be able to stay on course. That is the first point. And in doing so, the global community needs to begin to realize the importance of transitioning away from fossil fuel. It is a difficult process of moving away from fossil fuel. It takes a long time. Economics are built around fossil fuel. So how do we begin to transition away from fossil fuel? That's the first part. The second part, that to achieve that, we need to work towards tripling the penetration of renewable energy and doubling energy efficiency as we speak. So that is a very important three big headline news, that we need to transition away from fossil fuel. We need to triple renewable energy and double the energy efficiency opportunities that we have globally. So how do we do that? Now, how do we do that? How do we do this in a way that we promote access to sustainable energy for people who need energy to be part of the economy? All right. So it is not about overemphasizing on the need to shift from fossil fuel to other sources of cleaner fuels. But how do we do so with a view that we sustain the economy and we sustain the livelihoods of people and people who need energy? And that is the concept of how we can transition in a just and in an orderly manner. So that's why the Ghanaian climate actions also prioritize the importance of energy efficiency and green cooling, and the fact that renewable energy alone cannot do the trick. It ought to be backed by other cost-effective, reasonable actions that are also relevant for the economy. The energy efficiency interventions, as I said earlier, featured very prominently in the NDCs, and it covered energy efficiency in homes or residential industry, and also in the service or commerce. And it covers a couple of areas. One of it is about the whole idea of labeling of appliances is one major area. And the fact that the whole idea of labeling of appliances in itself is a way of showing that once an appliance is labeled and it has a higher energy rating, in theory, it could save energy and by extension, save emissions. All right. So that is how the whole idea of promoting energy efficient appliances in homes or even in industry or services could have a positive impact on emission reductions. There are also other interventions that are focusing on awareness creation, human behavioral change in homes and also in industry, and the fact that people understand the need for energy conservation in itself, right? And they adopt those practices, for example, is a way of also promoting energy efficiency practices across board. The third one, which is also very striking for me, is also the issue about strengthening the effort to enforce the existing appliance or energy efficiency laws that we have. All right. And I think that is also a very important aspect of the energy efficiency interventions that the Commission is leading. That said, there are also important areas that are not seen as energy efficiency interventions, but in theory they are. For example, the whole idea of using better stoves themselves are energy efficiency interventions, and stoves feature very strongly in the NDCs. So the same as transport, the fact that we want to use better way of transportation and adopting better transport interventions themselves are energy efficient way of transportation. All right. So again, that's also part of it. The other part of it is also the green cooling part, which is also interesting, which has a double benefit. All right. Because I think my colleague had already explained this earlier about the fact that the use of fridges that contains climate-friendly refrigerants, right, are themselves better for the climate, better for energy, because then the appliances are also energy efficient. So the promotion of green cooling or climate-friendly refrigerants in the country itself is also very important, because then that provides double benefit for both the climate and also for energy efficiency.
Interesting. So many programs and projects that have been placed in the NDCs. I'll zoom into the carbon market space, knowing that you're the head of the carbon markets office as well. So how can we use carbon finance to support energy efficiency and cooling to achieve the NDCs? Do you have any ideas about that?
Yes, thanks. So let me put it from the very outset that carbon finance is not designed to replace or to dislodge the investment finance that's required for interventions. So it's supposed to enable those investments. So that point has been made clear. And therefore, energy efficiency interventions, that the investment was not going to be worthwhile, right? It's made worthwhile with carbon finance. So that's how the structure is. If energy efficiency interventions are already commercially viable, then you don't need carbon revenues to make it commercially viable. All right. So that's the first point that I thought I should make clear. And therefore, in the NDCs, we had indicated interventions that are conditional and unconditional. Those that are unconditional are the ones that we thought or we determined that the government would be able to mobilize resources with its partners to raise investment and put into them. And therefore, those ones would happen anyway. So if you have a measure that is in the unconditional measure, those measures, we define them as measures that either funding had to either be fully mobilized or half of it has been mobilized, or that there's a strong commitment for it to be mobilized. And therefore, those measures are unconditional measures. For the conditional measures, you are looking at measures that can be additional to the unconditional when finance is made available to the country. And the finance can come from private sector, can come from the market, in this case, the carbon market, because those measures are commercially viable when support is made available to the country. And on that basis, energy efficiency and green cooling investments are in the category of conditional. So those measures are going to be over and above the unconditional measures because we need support to be able to scale up our investment. And that is a very fundamental argument to prove that without the carbon finance or finance from the market, we are not able to raise the investment to invest in energy efficiency and green cooling beyond what we are doing. So that's a very important point. And therefore, how then do we monetize the savings that or emission savings that you can get from adopting energy efficiency interventions? So let's use a very good example from hotels, right? Many hotels have water heaters, and the water heaters would typically rely on the grid for power, and or when the grid power is not available, they would have to use generators to produce the power. And then when the power is produced, or when the grid power is available, then you need to use the power to heat the water. And then when you on the shower, the water comes for you to enjoy. But behind that process is the fact that you are using energy to heat the water. And the byproduct of it is about the fact that you're producing carbon dioxide, because then behind that, whatever is heating the water is energy, which was produced from fossil fuel, out of which carbon dioxide was produced. All right. So any intervention, right, that you put in place to produce the same amount of water that is hot and that meets the desire of the user, that achieves a lower or avoid the production of the emissions. All right. Those emissions can be quantified. So you can have the same water heater produce hot water for the hotel clients, but the alternative could be that the same amount of water that was produced could produce less amount of emissions. One can quantify those emissions and place a price on it and sell it. And that is the way we can monetize the emissions that were saved. So you can compare the production of the water with grid power or generator as against the production of hot water with something else, like, say, solar, or like, say, anything that can reduce the power consumption. The difference is what you present as emissions saved.
So, the argument that you've just placed, can I say that if I was to place one that's not climate-friendly with a climate-friendly air conditioner, then I can save some emissions and then monetize it and sell it.
Or if you have a bulb that is incandescent, right? So one bulb that's incandescent, and then you replace the bulb with an LED bulb, all right? Mm-hmm. And the bulb is used for 12 hours or it's used for 8 hours, right? The LED bulb is supposed to use less energy to give you the same amount of outputs as you get with that incandescent bulb,
mm-hmm.
right? The difference between the LED bulb and the incandescent bulb's energy consumption, all right, is what we present as the difference that could lead to emission savings.
Mm-hmm.
Because in principle, the LED bulb will save energy because it'll consume less energy, give you the same output or even a better output compared to the incandescent bulbs. The difference is what you can compute as the savings of emissions.
Wow. So with all of these interesting solutions, then what has really been the challenges in terms of seeing the future of energy efficiency growth, the programs and projects that have been put in the NDCs?
Okay. One of the things that we have found as a key challenge or a barrier is getting access to a scalable investment, right? So how do we scale the investment in energy efficiency and green calling? And one of it is what I refer to as the investment from the carbon market. And many, many of the carbon markets projects are largely energy efficiency interventions, from cook stoves down to the distribution of efficient bulbs and also with green calling. So if you come to our office here, we have a list of around 40 projects in our pipeline. The first 10 projects that are ready to go to the market includes green cooling and also cook stoves, which in itself is an energy efficient way of cooking. Right? 34% of our total pipeline basically coming from clean cooking stoves, which, as I said, is to help raise money for the market.
To end things, I mean, I know that there'll be a revised EDC. What are some of the things that we should look forward to when it comes to the area of energy efficiency and green cooling?
So you're kind of jumping the gun. We are going to begin the process to review the NDCs from June. And the aim is to submit the NDCs to the UNFCCC somewhere in the first quarter of next year. And the purpose of the revision of the NDCs is to do about two or three things. One is to do an objective assessment of the extent to which we have achieved the previous NDC commitment and come up with the gaps and areas where we need to strengthen. The other one is that once we know the gaps, we could then include areas that were not covered in the previous NDCs. And two, we would make the NDCs more policy relevant, because there might have been new policies that were not covered in the previous NDCs, and therefore we want to make the revised NDCs more policy relevant and tech relevant, and above all, strengthen the process of implementation, which includes access to finance. The fourth one probably will be about how do we increase the ambition of the NDCs, even as we... So with this process, we would, as I said, we would do a thorough assessment of what we achieved in the past, where are the gaps, areas where we need to strengthen, and areas where we want to increase the ambition of the NDCs. Definitely, the revision of the NDC will look at the entire breadth of the energy interventions in the NDCs and how we've been faring over the last 5 years, and areas where we need to strengthen it, we will strengthen it. And areas where we need to ensure that we will prioritize them for us to be able to get investment into the country, we will do that. The extent of the strengthening of the energy efficiency intervention in the NDC, I will leave it to the Ministry of Energy and the key stakeholders to determine next year. But believe you me, by next year, we would have covered a lot of the issues, including energy efficiency and green cooling.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you today. And that's a wrap for today's episode of Let's Talk About Energy. I hope you enjoyed our discussion on energy efficiency, cooling, and Ghana's climate change ambitions. It was good to have such a stalwart like Dr. Benefo on our podcast. If you'd like to learn more or suggest future topics or episodes, kindly reach out to us on our social media or visit our website. And don't forget to be energy efficient and also think about your cooling. Stay cool. Michael signing out. Bye.